Howdy, and welcome everyone. Appreciate you joining us for this week's episode of The Headline. I am Jeremy Kitchen. I am the Capitol correspondent here at Texas Scorecard, endeavoring as best I can to fill in for Brandon Waltons, who is not only the host of the show, but the managing editor here at Scorecard. We have a lot to talk about today. We'll be discussing certainly here a little bit later some of the shenanigans, if you will, that have taken place in the first called special session, some of the action or lack of action, depending on the prism you're looking at it through. But first, before we get to that, we're going to talk about the election for the Republican Party of Texas chairman's position that took place on Sunday. The newly elected chairman is former State Representative Matt Rinaldi, and our own Brandon Walton sat down and asked him a few questions about kind of what is on the horizon and his thoughts for the future of the party. So take a look here.
Republican Party of Texas has new leadership. That's right. Earlier this week, the State Republican Executive Committee voted to replace outgoing GOP Chairman Alan West with the new chairman, Matt Rinaldi, a former state representative. Matt Rinaldi is joining us this morning. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us, Matt. And I think the first question that a lot of people have asked me when they saw that not only you were running for this position, but now that you have it and are going to be the chairman of the Republican Party of Texas is, why did you want that job?
Well, it's such an important position in terms of the upcoming 2022 elections and in terms of the upcoming special sessions. We're at a time right now where Democrats are getting more and more extreme and are sometimes our legislative priorities coming from the grassroots are being ignored. I think a GOP chair has tremendous power to alter not only the trajectory of policy, but also the trajectory of our elections.
What do you think the role of the state party is? That's something that a lot of people seem to have differing opinions on. What is your view?
Well, I mean, we have a mission statement. It's to promote conservative principles and to build the infrastructure that will allow us to do so in order to paraphrase our mission statement. So I think the party has a lot of different functions, all built towards that one mission. We help in elections. We build a victory project. We raise money. We organize an office with communications. And we push our priorities at legislative session, both by testifying and through public communications.
And as far as, you know, the legislative priorities, right, this was something that was really, really prominent during the regular legislative session. Now we're seeing it again in the special session. We'll talk about that in just a moment. But what is the party's role in making sure those legislative priorities get across the finish line?
I think it's to do anything in its power to make sure those legislative priorities get across the finish line. And our power as a party, as a voice of the grassroots, comes through our ability to organize, communicate, and publicly advocate for those priorities.
Obviously, you've only been on the job now for less than a week. Have you started having conversations with lawmakers? And obviously, you've got relationships with a lot of these people already, yes, having served in the House.
Yeah, I've spoken with, I believe, every statewide official except for the governor, or have been contacted by every statewide official except for the governor, and talked with many of my old legislative colleagues about what we can do in coordinating messaging and helping get those priorities across the finish line and in removing barriers to those priorities passing.
It seems the biggest barrier, at least the most immediate barrier at the moment in the Texas House, at least, is that the Democrats are not there. Right. Obviously, they've got this first special session. Democrats have left for Washington, D.C. They've not been able to conduct business in the House. They've been at a standstill. What should Republicans in the House be doing now to make sure that they can still get their agenda across?
So they have tremendously broad constitutional power to compel the attendance of absent members. Article 3, Section of the Texas Constitution gives the remaining members broad discretion to impose penalties to compel the attendance of absent members. And the Texas rules provide other avenues as well. One thing they could do is what Speaker Phelan did today, and I applaud him for that, is remove Joe Moody, who's absent as Speaker pro tem. But he needs to go farther. He needs to, as the Republican Party of Texas has called for, I've called for, the governor has called for, remove all Democrats who are absent from leadership positions. And then we can look to 2003, what they did as well. They fined members who were absent, and they removed their office holder privileges. We really have broad discretion as to what we can do to these members. And I hope with the eyes of the nation on him that Speaker Phelan would especially do that. And this, by the way, brings up the other issue as to why Democrats have committee chairmanships in the first place. I think we really need to re-examine that, especially now. I thought we needed to re-examine that in the beginning of session. Now, especially, why are we giving Democrats committee chairmanship?
Yeah, this is a process. I mean, we say it often. This is a process that's not even done in the U.S. Capitol, right?
Right.
And Nancy Pelosi is not giving Chip Roy a committee chairmanship.
No, and Kevin McCarthy is not giving Democrats committee chairmanships when he becomes speaker. It's a practice that I think is a relic of the era when we had conservative Democrats, but now you have Democrats leaving the state, effectively comparing what they're doing to the biggest, or what they're doing in this election law legislation is the biggest crisis since the American Civil War. I mean, you know, we say it's absurd and we make fun of them for it, but when they're saying they're in a civil war, it's probably a good idea to believe them and not put them in power positions in the legislature.
We've talked a little bit about what the House can do, what Speaker Phelan can do, but what options do you think, in your estimation, that the governor has right now? Obviously, he's the person who calls the special sessions. He's put the items on the list. A good number of those items were conservative priorities. Some of those Republican priorities were still left off the list. I mean, he can call session after session. I mean, what else could he possibly be doing right now?
I would be doing exactly the messaging he was doing now and saying, I will call special session after special session until the Democrats come back. And if any 13 Democrats trickle back into the state to see their families or go to their jobs, then we're going to take them, arrest them, and bring them into the Capitol until we have a quorum. What I would also be doing is putting a new GOP priority on the call every week until the Democrats return. You know, we should be pushing our priorities when the opposing party effectively shirk their duties and says they're basically in a civil war with us.
You obviously, like I mentioned at the top of this interview, you were elected by the members of the State Republican Executive Committee. You have indicated you are going to run again next year with the broader body?
Yes. Yeah, some people were concerned they didn't want just a transitionary chair, which I understand. We're going to be in a 2022 election cycle. You don't want to change in leadership, you know, during that crucial campaign.
Mm-hmm. What are you and the party going to be doing right now, looking ahead to those 2022 election cycles?
We're going to be raising a lot of money. Mm-hmm. We're going to be building our infrastructure, working with the RNC and both on our own and with the RNC and putting boots on the ground in districts that are going to be contested, and working with our congressmen towards building a very large victory project. Federal law is such that, you know, victory projects being run by the Republican Party of Texas have many advantages in running a campaign. And if you don't take advantage of a strong victory project, you're really just, you know, you're giving away a great asset.
Last question, folks who want to get involved in the party and in the efforts heading into 2022, but I guess just kind of ongoing, what can they be doing to help?
Well, you know, contact your precinct chair. If you don't have a precinct chair, become a precinct chair. Contact your county party and ask how you can get involved. In the end, Republican Party of Texas is a grassroots organization that's built from the ground up with precinct chairs and delegates truly getting involved and helping to elect Republican officials at the top. But it all comes from the precinct chair level. So get involved as soon as you can.
Great advice. Excellent. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Well, I want to thank Matt Rinaldi for joining us and kind of giving some insight, if you will, as to his kind of first week on the job as the newly elected Republican Party of Texas chairman. Thanks so much for doing that. Very quickly, before we pivot here, I want to give some shout outs to those watching from home. We greatly appreciate it. Certainly want to thank Emilio from El Paso, Deborah from Rosenberg, Mary Catherine from Dallas, and Steph from Deer Park. Thanks so much for joining us today. I introduce here my colleague here at Texas Scorecard, Jacob Asmussen, senior journalist. Thanks for joining us, man. Let's talk about, can you imagine being a newly elected Republican Party of Texas chairman on Sunday and then finding out that, you know, you're kind of dealing with this hysteria and some of the shenanigans that have taken place this week, specifically in the Texas House of Representatives, but generally for the first called special session with corn busting and all that good stuff. I mean, just absolutely insane to me. Do you have any initial thoughts on that? Or
he stepped into a soap opera.
Sure. Yeah. I think the best way to approach this is kind of walk through a timeline of stuff that's happened, right? So as our viewers may know, the first called special session started last Thursday, July 8th. Immediately, the House and Senate kind of got to work on different priority bills that were on Governor Abbott's special session agenda. Over the weekend, both chambers had hearings on the omnibus election integrity bill. In the Senate version is Senate Bill 1. The House version is House Bill 3. There are some nuanced differences there. They are different bills than were offered during the regular session, of course. We've got a summary. Our own Aaron Anderson did a summary kind of comparing all of those things. You can find that at texasscorecard.com website. But that kind of started these rumblings that we started to hear really at the end of like Sunday evening going into Monday, that Democrats, specifically House Democrats, were leaving. They were jettisoning off, you know, leaving the state of Texas. And it became kind of a reality on Monday when we saw that several of them were getting on a bus. That bus was going to an airport, and they were flying. We found out they were flying, of course, to Washington, D.C. Not all of them took that avenue. Some took their own chartered transportation there. Some, we found out, we'll talk about that here in a second, are still remaining in Texas, which is interesting. But that has kind of created this saga and thrown the legislative prospects for a whole host of stuff into a state of chaos here in the Texas legislature. So that happened Monday. The House had already recessed. They had not adjourned. They had recessed since they had last met on Friday of last week until Tuesday. So they couldn't do anything until Tuesday when they gaveled in at 10 o'clock. They gavel in 10 a.m. and sure enough, they lacked the people there, lacked the quorum, as it's known. Quorum in the House of Representatives is 100 out of the 150, two-thirds of all elected lawmakers there. They lacked that. They made a motion, a parliamentary motion called Call of the House, which essentially, you know, confirmed via a record vote that they did not have quorum. Turns out there were 80 people there. There were 76 Republicans and 4 Democrats that stayed behind. And so ultimately, we are in day four of this kind of state of chaos in the House where they can't do anything. Lack of quorum in the House prevents them from considering bills not only on the floor, but in committees. And so it's created this kind of weird thing that the state of Texas hasn't seen since 2003. You have any thoughts?
Yeah, well, let's cut through the facade of this whole situation,
sure.
Right? This whole week has been a soap opera.
Sure.
Like I said, you know, I feel like I'm watching an episode of Days of Our Lives. You
sure.
know, not that,
right.
not that I've seen that, don't tell anyone. But this whole week has been a show. Yeah. Let's step back and look at the real story here. This whole time, Republicans have had the power.
Sure.
Right? For months, they've had the power.
Right.
Right? On all of these priority issues. And they did nothing.
Yeah.
They didn't get the work done in the spring during the regular session. Right? All of these cornerstone spotlight issues.
Sure.
Election integrity, protecting kids from gender mutilation
sure.
surgeries.
Sure.
Right? Protecting young women's sports. All of these spotlight issues. They had the majority.
Yeah.
They had the power. and they didn't get it done.
Sure. We're certainly going to get into that. Let's kind of go through the timeline here. So because they made that motion successfully, it needed 15 seconds on the House, and of course they got that. What that did, it allowed, under warrant of arrest, it employed the House Sergeant at Arms to go and search out missing lawmakers, right? Or at least that's what we've been publicly told was going to happen. Moving on through the timeline here, we had yesterday Speaker Phelan announced that he was stripping the Speaker Pro Tem, Joe Moody, a Democrat from El Paso, of his title, Speaker Pro Tem. That was it. He still maintains his committee vice chairmanship and seniority and all of that good stuff. But that was kind of the first, I'm not going to say shot across the bow, but the first thing we've really seen the Speaker do in retaliation for a large swath of lawmakers leaving. That, of course, got a response from multiple Democrat caucuses, to include the House Democrat Caucus, the Mexican American Legislative Caucus, the Black Caucus, several caucuses had a joint statement yesterday basically saying, we don't think you did anything wrong, and that prompted yet another event in this legislative saga. You saw Speaker Phelan release a statement saying he's chartering his own plane and it's going to be waiting on them in D.C. And he implores, these lawmakers to coordinate with his staff to get on the plane so they can return. And almost almost immediately, you had the lawmakers respond by saying, "We're not going to do that. We're going to stay." Do you have any thoughts about that?
I mean, golly, look, like Chairman Rinaldi said, the Texas House has broad constitutional discretion to wrangle these rogue lawmakers back, right? They could fine them. They could impose penalties on them, right? And like you said, we're just starting to see the Texas Speaker, some of the Republican leadership, kind of wade their toes into the water of using that. But this whole thing is silly, right? You don't see this happening in the U.S. Capitol, right? Nancy Pelosi, in the first place, doesn't give powerful leadership positions to Ted Cruz, right? But yet, for some reason, in the Texas Capitol, where Republicans hold the majority, they hold the power, they do everything they can. They scramble to give their power away to the Democrats as fast as they can, rather than using their power, like they do in the U.S. Capitol, to get their work done for the citizens of the state.
I mean, you may recall, to your point, in the beginning of session, the House rules were adopted unanimously, right? It's and this has come up a few times during session. There were people that did take issue. There was an amendment or attempted amendment to the rules that basically would have made it to where, I believe it was Brian Slayton that offered the amendment, would have made it to where, the chairmanships would only be given to the party that maintained majority control. And that resoundingly got defeated. I mean, there were only a handful of Republicans that actually voted in favor of that. You even had Freedom Caucus member Briscoe Kane, a Republican from Deer Park, basically be the guy that goes up and spoke against that amendment to the rules. It's absolutely, you reap what you sow in a way coming into this special session. We also saw, to your point, you had talked about the new chairman, Matt Rinaldi, who we just heard from, basically say that the speaker absolutely has the power to strip things like chairmanships and vice chairmanships and seniority privileges and stuff, even though Speaker Phelan seems to keep kind of saying he doesn't. You even had Governor Abbott but on multiple occasions now, but certainly tweet out that he believes they should lose these privileges. But as of now, nothing's been done. Yet it's an interesting sort of thing in that because the majority of them are out of the state, law enforcement can't be sent there. They have no jurisdiction. And so in a lot of ways, and you see this on social media from several lawmakers, you've had a lot of them just kind of poking fun at the governor and the really Republican leadership on their inability to be able to do anything. Yeah. You had thoughts about that?
Yeah, well, I think the most important thing in this whole saga, who loses? Well, it's the citizens of Texas, right? Outside of the Capitol, outside of their little movie set that they're on right now, you have real citizens, right? Families being forced out of their homes because they can't keep up with the property taxes, right? You have 9-year-old James Younger in Dallas who faces permanently scarring procedures if he is sterilized, if he's forced to go through some of these gender disfiguring procedures, right? And you have women's sports under attack, right? And so all of the real citizens in the state are suffering outside of the legislature's little movie set bubble.
Sure, that's absolutely correct. And we can kind of get into some of those specifics here. We had, so yesterday, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, of course, he governs a body, the state Senate, who, even though they had 9 Democrats join their House Democrat colleagues in D.C., if you will, they still have quorum, so they can still conduct business. Dan Patrick weighed in yesterday and indicated via statement that he supported Governor Abbott's now multiple times call to say, I'm going to keep calling special sessions until the business gets done. So Patrick opined and said he supported that. And then he also notably indicated that he supported or believes that Abbott should add to the special session call, the next special session call, consideration of changing the what it means to have quorum, meaning like, okay, maybe the House shouldn't have 2/3. Maybe they should have majority plus 1, which would be 76, right, or what have you. And that's an interesting prospect to think about. You know, I think for someone like Patrick, it's fairly easy to say that when you maintain quorum. But it was an interesting sort of thought there. You also had yesterday a revelation by a Republican State Representative Kyle Biederman, out of Fredericksburg. He had released a statement indicating that he had been in contact with the Department of Public Safety, the Texas Department of Public Safety, and the House Sergeant at Arms. He had talked to both of them, communicated to both of them, and they had told him that they had not been directed by House leadership, specifically Speaker Phelan, to actually go and arrest any lawmakers that we've seen multiple reports of now that still reside in Texas. We have an article up on the site where Leo Pacheco, a Democrat from San Antonio, for instance, had posted publicly on Facebook that he's still in Texas, still in the state. Yeah. And, you know, we do have jurisdiction, obviously. Our law enforcement does have jurisdiction in this state, and they have not, to my knowledge at least, been employed to go and track them down. We've got reports of other lawmakers that are still potentially here too. All it would technically take to reach 100 with 87 Republicans is 13 Democrat lawmakers to return so they can conduct business. Do you have any thoughts there?
Yeah, well, Republican leadership continues to make excuses to not get things done,
sure,
right? I mean, this whole special session saga should have never happened,
sure,
right? I mean, the priority issues, election integrity, these were spotlight things, priorities of the Republican Party of Texas, priorities of the lieutenant governor and the governor. And so if they were such priorities, why did they wait until the very last day of the regular session, right, to try to do anything about it? Why on some of these other issues did Republicans in the House not only not do anything to get it done, but they actually intentionally stopped the bills from moving forward? And yet now they want to come back and say, oh, well, we created the problem, but now we're going to be the savior to the problem.
Well, so to that point, right, things that were not Republican Party of Texas priorities, but are priorities of Governor Abbott's now on his special session agenda call, that Republicans are attempting to kind of message in multiple avenues via press conferences, via social media, priorities that are dying as a result of Democrat lawmakers being gone. These are things like the property tax relief, right? Protecting children and the 13th check, right? And so I'm not going to get into the details of those, but what's important to note to your point is that these were not priorities during the regular session, but happened to be this go around conveniently, I would argue, and that they want to kind of hammer home and blame on Democrats, things they didn't get done during the regular session. It's a absolutely interesting. Okay, I think that's probably a good summary. There's just so much that's happened or not happened, depending on how you look at it. We'll kind of pivot to the Senate. As I mentioned before, Senate still maintains quorum, so they're still able to conduct business. And man, conduct business they have. I mean, they've passed out almost all of Governor Abbott's special session agenda items. Let's kind of talk through some of those real quick. I mentioned earlier the election integrity bill took the form of Senate Bill 1. They've already passed that out. We talked about protecting women's sports. That's Senate Bill 2 and Senate Bill 32. They kind of do two different things. What are your thoughts there?
It's great. I mean, it's great that the Texas Senate is passing things.
Sure.
Right? They did that in the regular session as well for the most part. But again, none of it really matters if it doesn't go all the way. And gets enacted into law.
Sure.
Right? And so that's great that they're getting their business done. And this just shows that when they want to get things done, sure, they can. They're right. able to. They have the power, again.
Sure.
It's all just whether they decide to.
Sure. I mean, they've passed the 13th check for teachers, as it's called. These are benefits, if you will. It's an additional money or monthly allotment for beneficiaries under the Teachers Retirement System of Texas. They passed the bail reform bill, Senate Bill 6, Senate Joint Resolution 3. Both notably, bail reform and election integrity were the two emergency legislative priorities that died in the waning days of the regular legislative session that kind of prompted all of this, if you will, right? Senate's already passed those. They passed the social media censorship bill, Senate Bill 5, already this week. They passed the family violence prevention bill in the form of Senate Bill 72. Notably there, the original bill that was filed was Senate Bill 9. It was authored by State Senator Royce West, a Democrat, there in the Senate. Well, Royce West was one of the 9 Democrats that left to go to D.C., so to punish him, if you will, Dan Patrick just kind of quickly created this other bill, Senate Bill 72, brought it like through the committee process real quick and said, Joan Huffman, you're the author of it, and same bill, but passed without Royce West's name on it, which is interesting. They passed what they're considering property tax relief in Senate Bill 8 and Senate Bill 12. And today, I believe, right now, they just gaveled in, I believe they're considering Senate Bill 3, which is the improvements on the ban on critical race theory, and then the abortion-inducing drugs. I mean, the Senate is getting to work, yeah. You know? In fact, Dan Patrick had indicated, I believe yesterday that, or no, I'm sorry, 2 days ago, that it was his intent to get done with all of the agenda by early next week. I mean, crazy. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, again, they're able to move when they want to.
Sure.
And it's good that the Texas Senate is doing it. Now we need the House to do it.
Sure.
And that's where citizens come in. You need to contact your representatives, contact the governor. They need to feel the heat. They need to feel the pressure to get the work done to help citizens, to protect them, to give them relief from these burdensome taxes that they can't keep up with, right? They have to get the work done. Otherwise, great if you pass a bill here or there. If it doesn't make it into law, it doesn't matter.
Sure. Well, so special session has the ability to last 30 days, right? And I think that lands on August 6th, August 7th would be the technical last day for the special session. It's still possible that these Democrat lawmakers return, even though they keep communicating that they won't. It's possible, right? And so it's still possible these bills go somewhere. Really, time is kind of we just have to wait and see, I guess, what's going to happen. So that'll be interesting. Quickly, we appreciate Sharon from Fort Worth joining us today. Sherry from Granbury, Lester from Friendswood, Sheila from Mansfield. Thank y'all so much. Tara from Dallas-Fort Worth area, and Sandy from Midlothian. Thank y'all very much for tuning in today. Some brief announcements here. We have the ongoing show that I host weekly every Monday, This Week in Texas. That will likely be jam-packed this week as well with the ongoing shenanigans. We try to kind of project what's going to happen in the week ahead in the ongoing special session, so join us there. And then, as always, because there is an ongoing legislative special session, and maybe you want to contact your legislator based on everything that's happening, make sure to check out the Texas Directory. It's located on the texasscorecard.com website under our Tools tab there, and it's got all the contact information you're going to need for your lawmaker. Again, everyone, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you again to Matt Rinaldi, the newly inducted Republican Party of Texas chairman, for joining us. And Jacob, thanks for joining us today. It'll be interesting to see what happens. So
it's a roller coaster.
Yeah, it's a roller coaster. Well, anyway, thank you guys. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for tuning in to The Headline. If you want to stay up to date with the news you need to be an informed citizen, be sure to check out texasscorecard.com and subscribe to our email list. You can also listen to this show and other shows on whatever podcast platform you use. Subscribe and review our show now to ensure other Texans can be informed.